TFM.
Fun will now commence.
Welcome back to The Journey, everyone, our dedicated Star Trek Voyager podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, how do you like my new ride? I know it's a bit rusty, looks a little bit old, but it's got a killer radio.
What's with the backfiring, Chris? Can you get that fixed? Because it scared me half to death.
That's a feature, Matthew. That's how people know I'm cool, when my truck backfires.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
I see those people around all the time here, especially with motorcycles going down the road, down the street from the house here. It's really cool when it's really noisy.
So cool. Like the coolest. Yeah, it's nothing cooler than having, you know, your car sound like a gunshot.
That's right. Yes, everyone. We're going to talk about trucks a little bit today and other ancient Earth technologies and people and all kinds of stuff as we continue our 30th anniversary rewatch of Star Trek Voyager, jumping into season two with the 37s. It's the first episode of the season, and here is a quick rundown of the story. Rust in space leads Voyager to one of the strangest finds in Star Trek history, a 1936 Ford pickup truck. Janeway decides to bring the ancient ground vehicle aboard, and Tom Paris, suddenly an expert on 20th century automotive tech, starts playing with the AM radio and picks up an SOS from a nearby planet. On the surface, the crew discovers even more oddities, humans displaced in time, including aviator Amelia Earhart, who famously vanished. Solving one of Earth's great mysteries turns out to be the easy part, however. After 400 years, humans have built a community on the planet, and they invite Voyager's crew to stay. Will they? Well, Matthew, that's the big mystery. Now, what do you think? It's the beginning of season two. Do you think Voyager's crew is going to stay on this planet?
Well, Chris, I had no idea that the fans, like the people of writing Voyager were fans of Everclear, because you could hear it on the AM radio, AM radio, you know. So I had no idea. I was psyched. I was so stoked to find out that these people were fans of Everclear. I mean, what a goodness. Fantastic. Wow, second season. Are they going to stay or are they going to go? Will I stay or will I go now? It's tough, Chris. I feel like we're reaching for a message in a bottle here, maybe an SOS message going out. I don't know. There's just a lot of songs running through my head because that's what you hear on the AM radio.
Well, exactly. Yeah. You know, when I was rewatching this, I was reminded of that famous song by the Coors, you know. So listen to the amplitude modulation receiver device. It's kind of a long title. I'm surprising it did so well on the Billboard charts.
You know, look, I do like the whole idea of like finding rust in space, you know, and there's a slight, like I think you mentioned before we even recording, there's kind of a TOS vibe in some ways to that, is that you would find something from old Earth. Right. You know, that happens a ton on TOS. And yeah, I mean, there is something interesting about this idea that there's a random Ford 1936 truck floating in the Delta Quadrant. And and how did it get there? I do think that as you come into the second season, you know, that does set up a fun Star Trek mystery for our crew to have to solve, you know, and with it, you know, broadcasting this AM signal that it's picking up, you know, in the area that's an SOS. You know, it leads our crew on an adventure to answer some questions about things that we as human beings have wondered about for a very long time. Alien abductions, you know, what's the answer there and that kind of stuff. So I do think it, you know, it is interesting that this is how they choose to come into season two. But we also know that a few episodes here at the beginning of this season were actually kind of meant for the end of last season. And so this doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't necessarily feel like a grand opening to a season that you would expect for the flagship show on UPN.
Right. Yeah. Well, so I'll talk about that in a second. I would just want to roll back to the TOS theme, because that's the one thing that this episode is often criticized for, how it doesn't make any sense that there would be rust in space, that there would still be gasoline in the truck, that the AM radio works, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's still water in the radiator, Chris.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's had its shields up. So anyway, it's kind of fun, though. Like, I always kind of liked that part of this episode, just because they're not even trying to make it make sense. It's just like Abraham Lincoln in space in the original series. It's
right.
That's the moment that it most reminds me of. But then it's also the idea of, you know, we're going to come across a planet where everyone has a society that evolved from Native Americans, or this one is based on Chicago gangsters, and this one is someone found an American flag and built a whole culture around it, right? It's that kind of stuff from TOS that, after so many years of not having that, it was kind of fun. It's the reason I like the Royale on The Next Generation. It's a terrible episode, but it's one that I actually watch kind of often, just because it's fun. And so I was okay with that. About how this reads as the beginning of season two, UPN, I mean, they just really kind of screwed Voyager over, I think, with what the writers were planning to do with the series by having them push episodes from season one into season two. And I guess they wanted to get the season launch, like the new season of this big show, launched ahead of other networks launching their shows for that TV season, which also seems kind of like a unnecessary thing to be worried about. But even though there are, I think it's four, is that right, episodes that got pushed into season two, they're not even shown in order. This was actually written to be the season one finale, which is why the crew is given this question of, are you going to stay on this planet or not? You could imagine it being a cliffhanger where we don't know if they're going to stay or not. I don't think that would have worked as a cliffhanger, really, because you don't have a TV series if everyone stays on the planet. Now, a few people might stay behind, and I think that would be okay. But I think that, as unbelievable as it is that nobody stays, I think the point here at this stage in the series wasn't so much about, would it be realistic for some people to decide to stay and others to go? I think they just wanted to build this unity among the crew to then push the ship on its journey for the rest of the series. And so in season one, you play around a little bit with this idea of, can we get home? Should we try to get home? Should we maybe settle somewhere? And then they're given this opportunity. And then everyone just says, nope, we're all together. We're going to be a crew. We're going to go. I think that was what they were going for.
We're all in this together. Just ends like, you know, High School Musical.
Yeah. But I think that's, you know, that's the reason for the crew being given the choice, and then why they didn't go. So the timing is, it was supposed to be the end of season one. And so it doesn't make any sense, really, for this to be the beginning of season two. It doesn't feel like a season opener. But I think if you read it as a season finale, at least some aspects of it make more sense.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the other part of this episode is that, you know, we've seen this before. You know, TNG did the neutral zone, where you find people from the past who have been brought forward in the future because of they've been locked in some kind of stasis. You know, for them, it was being cryogenically frozen. And, you know, so we've done this before. And, you know, I think the interesting part of this episode is that there actually is a lot of promise to the ideas. And we've talked about this as we talked through the first season of Voyager, look, Voyager has a lot of promise because I think its mission of being in a completely different side of space, being, you know, trapped in the Delta Quadrant, so far away from Starfleet, is something that we even talk about in the episode, right? Janeway discusses the idea that a lot of these rules and regulations, you know, are seemingly unimportant in the Delta Quadrant when it comes to the things that they're actually dealing with. It's so different out here when you're not in close contact with home. And there's so much I think you could have done with the episode in that sense, where it really lived up to the promise of this idea of rust in space, and there are human beings here that have been brought here. And of course, you know, we'll also do this. We did this on Enterprise, right, with, you know, the North Star episode in season three. Yep. So we would do this again there. I think it's actually more successful than it is here. And so it's just really interesting. And like, I think it's to talk about like the alien abductions idea answered is important because, you know, and this is obviously something that, you know, Steven Spielberg has just made a brand new movie about that we're going to talk about the 602 Club here soon, called Disclosure Day, about this idea of uncovering the fact that aliens exist and people have been abducted and those kind of things. So the fact that's interesting, that aliens were abducting humans to be in a workforce of slaves, which that's going to come back in Voyager. So this is your reminder. That those slaves then revolted and freed themselves, but then they destroyed the ship and the technology in the process, but somehow they're able to keep the 37s alive. I think even in the setup of the episode and kind of the crux of the episode, it's like it's just kind of half thought out. You know, they haven't fully thought out all of the storyline structure here. And I think that's one of the places where some of it just kind of falls apart a little bit, because it's like, oh, Amelia Earhart, mystery solved at last. But the actual explanation of who she is and why she's here and all that just doesn't quite all add up.
Yeah. Yeah. I did think it was fun the first time this aired, the idea that, hey, we've solved the Amelia Earhart mystery. Now we know what happened to her, and the idea that she got abducted by aliens in 1937 and she's been living on the other side of the galaxy, maybe in cryostasis, but she's been there. I thought it was kind of fun. There was like something in the air or something in the water, I guess, at this time where, you know, there were a lot of stories related to things like this being made. And if you're going to grab somebody from history, Amelia Earhart, I think, is a good choice because of the fact that we didn't know what happened. They were able to give her, in this episode, a secret mission that she was on that no one was supposed to know about. And it works for Janeway. And I think that's really the key, the idea that Janeway, as we know in Starfleet history, she's not really the first captain, but as far as at this point, as the series is going, she's the first captain of a starship that we follow anyway, week to week. And meeting someone who you could legitimately believe would be a hero of hers, that worked. And also, I think it's important to keep in mind, and I was thinking about this, like if someone younger were watching Voyager today for the first time, the fact that Amelia Earhart is being played by Sharon Lawrence would just be completely lost on them because it's 30 years later. But at the time, you'll remember, Sharon Lawrence was really big on TV with NYPD Blue, and having her be a guest in this episode was actually a really big deal at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that it was good for Star Trek. I think that there are a lot of areas in which this episode doesn't work, but I think having Kate Mulgrew and Sharon Lawrence being able to play off each other in this episode does give some strength to that part of the story of a female captain meeting a hero like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think that part is something that's wonderful in it. I think it does, you know, on that issue alone, you know, it does work and it is nice. And I think what's interesting about the episode is the way in which it just doesn't push any boundaries. It's like it just wants to tell this kind of cute story. In fact, I feel like the whole episode is kind of full of this. We have the cute meet cute with the Ford truck in space. And then we're oh, guess what, Chris? We're going to land the ship.
Got to land the ship.
Because, you know, reasons that are so convoluted and silly that make zero sense as to why we're going to have to land Voyager, because, you know, you can't land with a shuttle and you can't transport. But for some reason, the ship itself, it's fine. And then when we get on the planet, there's no, I mean, it's a perfect planet. And so
yeah, it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's very strange on that front. And it's like, what do we, it leaves you thinking, you know, as a fan watching the show. And I think it is different. Like, when you think of watching it originally, but watching it now, I think, you know, originally you could, as a fan, you're just excited the show's back for the second season and you can let some things go, right? But man, there is just so much in this episode where you feel let down because they just don't take any of the ideas that they have and actually run with them.
Yeah. And they had a lot of ideas that just don't quite fit together.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
And they don't try to like really make it work. The landing the ship part is also because it was supposed to be the end of season one. So let's end it with some big thing like, oh, we can actually land the ship. So the landing the ship part is fine. It's fun to see the ship. We got blue alert. We have this new alert going on. That was all good. It's just that you need to make a believable justification for why you need to land the ship. That's the only thing. You know, the landing part itself, great. But remember how much it cost to do visual effects like this back then. They spend all this money on landing the ship. So now they don't have the money for other things like showing us the communities where the humans are living.
It was atrocious how bad that was. Like, it was such a groan moment because absolutely you have to see that, right? Because, and this is the thing too, right? They talk about how great it is, and we're supposed to believe that people could be tempted to stay here, and yet, there, I mean, you know, come on. You're not really thinking in your mind that anybody's going to stay there because they didn't even show you the cities.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you can't really dangle the, are they going to stay? Is it tempting enough for them to stay when we don't even know what it looks like? You know, exactly. It could be like a little shack or something. Like, it could be all little shacks lined up in a row. And
I mean, it probably is.
It seems great to the people living there because they don't know what anything looked like on Earth. But yeah, you got to show us something, right?
Yeah.
You know, give us a slice of pecan pie or something.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Look, I think the biggest missed opportunity, but the best part of the episode is that idea of the crew being given a choice. That there is this wonderful planet that they can stay on, and it is full of human beings just like them. And it's full of human beings that have evolved very similarly to those that we know in Star Trek, and which I think is really interesting. And I would argue that the reason that is they're human beings who they know aliens existed. And so therefore, you know, that is what brings them together, even with these differences. Although the fact that they're almost too similar to just the humans we know in the 24th century makes zero sense, because you would think these people would be really paranoid because they've been abducted and therefore they'd be much more defensive minded and everything like that. So, you know, but the idea of just like this crew has this opportunity to possibly stay there and create a life when they don't know if they're ever going to get home, and they don't know if they're going to die on the way trying to get home. And so I think that is an excellent idea. And like you said, this would have meant so much if this episode had been at the end of season one and you would have been left with that cliffhanger. Now, I think the biggest mistake is not actually having some people on the ship say, yeah, I want to stay here. Because I think that is a much, and if they told the story today, absolutely there would have been three or four crew members who would have stayed. Because it makes so much more sense. You know, when you think of the idea of people like, yeah, I love being in Starfleet, but, you know, I didn't want to not even be able to think about the possibility of, you know, having a family and all those kind of things. And so, yeah, I met so-and-so here on Voyager, and you know what? That's our goal. We want to stay here, raise a family, you know. So, like, there's just so many things that it becomes even with this something idea like that, factory where everything was just an idea, but then we don't follow through on any of the ideas.
Yeah. Well, even something like the family question there, it doesn't even have to play out as a cut and dry thing, like, we're going to stay on the planet. Janeway could have said, why don't you stay on the ship and raise a family? Because we might have to become a generational ship.
Right.
That could have been part of it as well. I think talking of, there's this sort of tug of war, I think, here when we talk about the ideas. So you've got the story being written by Brannon Braga and Jerry Taylor. And I think that Braga probably had his ideas of what he would want to do with the story. But for Jerry Taylor, I think the story is really, it's about Janeway meeting Amelia Earhart. You know, of course, you know, we've talked about it on Literary Tricks in the past. You know, Jerry Taylor wrote Mosaic, right? She basically wrote a whole backstory to Janeway. Janeway is the most important thing on this show for Jerry Taylor. And we were just talking about not seeing the settlements, and Chakotay's telling us how great the settlements are, but we don't see them at all. And Michael Piller had said that, yeah, that didn't really work for him, but sometimes, you know, production dictates what you're able to do. And Jerry Taylor said the same thing. Yeah, you have to compromise sometimes, but I don't really see that as a problem. Like, she didn't really think that it was an issue that we don't see the communities, because I think for her, that wasn't the important part of the story. The important part of the story was Janeway and Amelia Earhart.
Well, and I think that
so there's this tug of war going on, I think, with the ideas. Yeah.
Yeah. I think in that too, that's the problem, is that that's not a good enough why for an episode, you know, because this is an ensemble show and we need the ensemble to have something to do. We need them. I mean, it's fun that, you know, we learn that Tom Paris is a, you know, 20th century person and loves things from the 20th century. And I that's a fun thing to learn about him. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But like, literally nobody else has anything to do in this episode. And even the fact that the 37s they pull out, I'm sorry, but the Japanese officer who got stolen right before World War II is not going to be friends with all of these people right away. I mean,
because he just woke up, right?
Right. There's just no look. And this is the problem, is that what it signifies is that Voyager on this episode, and as we go through season two, I think we have to figure out, are they going to hit the easy button every time? And this feels like an episode where they just hit the easy button. You know what? We're not gonna address that. We're not even gonna think about that. We're not even gonna pretend like there could be any implications to this. Who cares? We're just hitting the easy button. And I think that's worrying as you come into the second season of a show. It's like, oh man, like, where's the reason to come back to this, you know?
Yeah. I think for me, I didn't need as much of a push to come back, but yeah, I know what you are saying, especially after so many consecutive years of Star Trek, there were those times as fans where we feel like we need fresh ideas, like we keep kind of recycling ideas, and there are elements in here, like we've already talked about, like with the neutral zone, for example, that get recycled. I think the idea of it just being a Janeway story and just being about her meeting Amelia Earhart, I would be fine with that. And having an episode that just really focuses on Janeway in this way, because we get that in Star Trek where you don't always need the entire cast to have something to do in a particular episode. But if you're going to do that, like, that's the story.
Right.
But here, that's just one part of this bigger story where nothing is actually fitting together. So if you want to do it, like, really make that the story. And don't throw out things like there are 100,000 humans living on this planet now, and we want the crew to stay with us, and all this kind of stuff. So
I think that's such a great way to put it, Chris. Like, if you want to do an intimate story here, you know, opening up the season with a Janeway tale, you know, where she comes face to face with one of her heroes, and maybe that helps us dig into who our captain is as a storytelling idea. That's great. I think that's fantastic. You know, again, the problem is the promise of this episode gives us so much more. And by opening all of these doors, but not actually exploring behind any of them, you end up feeling cheated because the episode doesn't give you all of these things it's promising. Mm-hmm. All of these ideas to explore for the crew and what it means for them to be on this journey, and whether or not they actually, after, you know, a year or so being on this journey, do they want to still be on this journey? You know, we don't really deal with any of those questions or the ramifications of any of those questions, which is, you know, just disappointing, I think, for the series. And I think that, you know, one of the things that it does then end up worrying you about is whether or not that's going to continue in the in the series, and it's a kind of a worrying it's a worrying trend, you know, that we're, I think, starting to see in Voyager, because, you know, when we talked about learning curve, we had some of these same problems, right, of it kind of promising a lot of things and seeming way more interesting than it actually turns out to be as an episode, because it's like they're just not willing to go the extra step in the storytelling. And so, yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting when I think about when we look at Enterprise, where you've got Brandon Braga and Rick Berman together writing a lot of stories. It feels like there's a lot more agreement and a lot more kind of thought going into what they want to do with a particular story. Even if fans didn't necessarily like what they were doing, I feel like there was a more cohesive vision at that point than what we see in early Voyager. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier that you mentioned the Japanese officer wouldn't be friends with everyone, and I said he just woke up. I guess he didn't. He just was woken up again here. But it's odd, like, because he still has the weapon, right? And the impression, if these people are descendants of the 37s who they are now keeping in cryostasis, it means that the humans, the 37s as they're called here, you know, the people that we follow, interact with, they would have had to have been awake and had children or something, right? I mean, how do you get the descendants? They're humans, right? So then they're put into a cryostasis and kept there as like a shrine for the humans that are now living on the planet to remember where they came from. But that also doesn't really mesh with the way the story's presented, right? You get the impression that they're just waking up because they don't even know where they are.
Well, I think that the way I read the story is that the 37s have never been woken up, but there are other humans who had been For some reason, these humans were still in stasis on this ship.
Well, that makes sense.
You know,
and that's how it feels when you're watching it.
And but I think what you're saying is this is another place where the episode is just not very clear with its storytelling. And it's just not doing a great job of explaining these different issues. So, again, when you're rewatching it, you're just completely pulled out of all of it because you start, like, snowballing with questions that have zero answers or just make so little sense.
They are their own mysteries in addition to the mysteries that we
are presented
with there and solve in this episode. Yeah. All right. Well, what are your final thoughts and what's your rating for the 37s?
This is a frustrating episode because, again, it's one of those places in Voyager where I can see so many great ideas that just never go anywhere. And I'm very frustrated with that because I think there are some great scenes, you know, the one where Chakotay and the captain are walking towards the cargo bay and they're talking about who might be there so they can leave is such a great scene. And then it's undercut by the fact that nobody's there. And I know we're supposed to have this emotional reaction, but it just feels so unearned that I don't have that emotional connection that I'm supposed to. So it kind of hurts what was great. And that happens throughout this episode, I would say over and over and over again. And so I'm going to be really harsh. This is a 2 out of 5 1936 Fords. Thankfully, you know, of course, as one would expect, when you find a Ford truck in space that's been there for 400 years, luckily there's still water and gasoline, so we can still go somewhere, Chris. But there's only two of them out of five.
All right. Well, we can race each other then.
Oh, sounds great. Yeah, so. Let's do it.
We can race around and find all the plot threads that didn't get tied together.
Don't fall in a plot hole, Chris. You'll never get out.
Damn it. There's plot holes all over this road.
I told them to pave those.
All right. Yeah, I don't really have much else to say about this episode other than, you know, I've always thought it was kind of fun to watch, like I said at the beginning, sort of like the Royale, although I enjoy the Royale a lot more than I enjoy this one on rewatches, but it's okay. I think it would have read completely differently if it had been the season one finale and if they had focused the story a little bit more and maybe if Brannon Braga had gotten his way when he suggested originally that maybe it should be a cliffhanger and they could have had higher stakes. But we got what we got. So I'm going to give this episode 4 cities that we never see. All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on the 37s. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. It is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcast. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email. Go to our website. Our new website is online. It's tfm.fan. That's tfm.fan/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose to the journey, and that will come to us by email, maybe even broadcasted to us over AM radio this time. And you can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to figure out how to get those landing struts up inside the ship without taking up all the space, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me all over social media under the name Matt Rushing 02 here on the network in the 602 Club outside all the great Star Trek talk we do. talking about all those other franchises we love. So I hope you'll check that out. It's an absolute blast talking about, you know, all the great movies that are coming out this summer. You can also find me on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One's called Owlpost, about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then Aggressive Negotiations with John Wills, as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out whether or not, you know, you want to stay on this planet and woo Amelia Earhart, where can people find you?
Wow. So I might have some competition in the wooing Amelia Earhart category there. We got some revelations of love.
It's true.
But when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing all the shows with you, of course. You can find me in the back catalog on many shows from the last 16 years talking about a wide range of Star Trek topics. And you can catch Larry Nemechek and me sometimes on the Ready Room here on the network. And if you'd like to touch bases in social media, you can find me everywhere. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Blue Sky is where I'm most active, but you can find me everywhere, so do drop me a line. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to get involved, how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting us now. Well, Matthew, I hope you're looking forward to next time when we're going to see a familiar face as the Junkyard Klingons come back in Initiations.
Well, Chris, I can't wait, so set course for home.